and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I'd like to tell you a little bit about Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio brings you a platform unlike anything on the internet today. A place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
It's great. In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant?
Dare to think out loud.
You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded.
Dare to think out loud.
You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren.
Dare to think out loud.
You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history.
Dare to think out loud.
You have tuned in to the right show.
Dare to think out loud.
Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Oh, wow. What a wonderful intro. Thank you, Giuseppe. I really appreciate you putting that together for us here at Dare to Think Out Loud. Just dare to think. That'll probably help us. And that's going to be a great center theme of our program today, as I'm joined by my good buddy out there in Lake Havasu, Arizona, Cal Robbins, and the great producer, Dave Scorpio, down south of the equator. So, Dave, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing okay in this crazy inverted world. How about you, Mike?
Well, if I was any better, I would be illegal in almost all 50 states, I am sure. also, Cal, how's things out there in the desert southwest, buddy?
Well, things are plugging right along out here in the desert southwest. Still hoping for rain. We've got overcast, but yeah, no moisture yet.
Well, I got up this morning, and in lieu of the terrible storms in Alabama yesterday and the tornadoes, two very good friends in Alabama, of course, DW, who does the program with me on Sundays with Dave and I, and my good friend Jamie Bell. I got up this morning and started immediately checking on them, and thank goodness they were both okay. Seems like Jamie may have been locked in by floodwaters, but that will subside, I'm sure. And a conversation with DW this morning, he was percolating right along, and all he had was a lot of rain as well. So we, of course, hate the loss of life in Alabama due to those tornadoes, but it's springtime in the South, and that's what we get. Today, we're going to jump into a subject that's probably not going to make a lot of people happy, and that's just fine, because I don't mind that. I seem to be able to make people unhappy a lot better than I make them happy when I start talking about history anyway. But before we get into that, Dave, would you tell the folks how they can keep this channel of free speech going out there, please?
Yeah, sure, Mike. You know, I'm sure everyone out there already knows, every time you turn on the corporately controlled media, each day is worse than the day before, with more lies stacked upon lies. It's just incredible. Not worth your time to even listen to it, other than to monitor enemy war propaganda. So help keep a bastion of free speech alive here on Revolution Radio, where people actually are bringing you the truth and real information, not lies stacked upon lies. So come aboard freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. And come aboard, become a Patreon member. Give what you can to keep this thing going. Or go to the Zazzle store. There's all kinds of cool stuff. There's shirts, hats. You can even get some stuff printed up on shoes if you want. And or go to the very bottom of the front page. There's an address where you can mail in donations the old-fashioned way, through snail mail, to our esteemed manager, Lady Horse. So come aboard and do what you can, guys. Keep this train moving. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. And I second that, folks. Help us keep this channel open for free-minded people to actually put voice to their beliefs. And it comes again to the title of the program today, and that is Dare to Think Out Loud. And I like to emphasize just dare to think. And because in today's world, the great majority of people do not think. People make decisions based on emotion. Things are emotional decisions. They are not logical, intellectual decisions. They are, and that is what we, they are emotional. And that is what we confront all the time when you're trying to show people what is the actual factual truth, as opposed to what they wish the truth was. And wishing is an emotion. Wishing and hoping. I always think of what the great Patrick Henry said about hope. He said, "We shall listen to the siren song of hope until we are all turned into beasts." I mean, you stop and think about that, and then look at the circumstances today with all of this hopium going on. And people are, you know, everything is an emotional response. And that's why, as we get into this subject today, I would like to give a little quote to start us off. And that is, war is when they tell you who the enemy is. Revolution is when you figure it out for yourself. And after all, this is Revolution Radio. So we hope you figure it out for yourself. But what we're going to touch on today, again, is not going to make a lot of people happy. And I know I've seen it before. When we do our programs, I've seen the people take offense in the chat room and other places when we talk about the Constitution. Well, people, let me tell you something. History will back me up on this, and today's results that we're staring in the face will back me up on this. Your Constitution is impotent. The government uses the Constitution to make laws to control the people. But the people cannot use the Constitution to force the government to stay within its confined limits. And we are seeing so many things like this. Now the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says that you cannot carry a gun, either concealed or open carry. And that just flies in the face of state laws like Arizona, which is in the Ninth Circuit, where our friend Cal resides. Flies right in the face. They have overruled the states. And it's kind of strange when we go back to the Virginia Ratification Convention on this, and one John Marshall, who was Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, probably did more to totally pollute the Constitution and the thought of the Constitution more than anybody in our history. But during the Virginia Ratification Convention, John Marshall, as a Federalist, told the people, the attendees, the delegates, if you will just ratify this Constitution, we promise you the federal courts will never overrule the state courts. Really? Isn't that what the Ninth Circuit Court just did? The Ninth Circuit Court just violated the Constitution, violated the words of the agreement, the compact that set aside. They've totally violated the thing you look at called the Second Amendment. Where in the Constitution is the restraint on government? And also this week we had good old President Sniffer Joe, who is going to ask the Supreme Court to allow the police to come into your home and to seize your weapons without a warrant. We're coming right back to those wonderful red flag laws again, where if the government deems you a threat, you're in deep trouble. And let me tell you something, anyone who is not a threat to this government right now is unworthy of the name America. Because if we're going to allow this government to do just any damn thing it wants to, and to say it's legal because the Supreme Court said it's okay, or because an appellate court said it's okay, or because the president asked the courts to say it's okay, as weak as the Constitution is, the federal government doesn't even come close to abiding by it. They do whatever the hell they want to. Now, anyone who has a brain would be able to tell you that the 2020 election was a complete and total fraud. Now, I'm not telling you that as a Trump fan because I'm not a Trump fan. I'm telling you that because that should have been obvious to even Ray Charles, that it was a complete and total fraud. What in the Constitution, in your quote, constitutional rights, can deal with that total fraud? The Supreme Court refused to hear the cases from the states. Well, that is the Supreme Court, in my opinion, admitting that there was fraud in the election, and they can't look at it because if they looked at it, it would prove it was a fraudulent election. So how's your Constitution working on that end? Now, ironically, 20 years before, the Supreme Court interfered with an election unconstitutionally and told the state of Florida to stop counting votes. Imagine that. The Supreme Court said, don't count any more votes. And they put the election into the hands of George W. Bush. George W. Bush was not elected by the people. He was appointed by the Supreme Court. Of course, that didn't bother the Republicans. You can violate the Constitution all you want to, as long as you do it to help Republicans. They don't care. The crazy thing about it is Democrats don't care how many times you violate the Constitution, as long as you're doing it to help Democrats. As we're seeing right now with all of these gun legislations and all of this other stuff. And if you people are truly believing these mass shootings, if you are truly hanging on to that and you are truly believing that, after reading the Operation Northwoods, after reading that, I honestly cannot figure out how in the world you could ever believe anything this government says to be true. In 1962, all the way up through the Department of Defense and the Joint Chiefs, they had agreed to kill Americans on the streets and create chaos to promote a political agenda. Do you really think the people in office now are any better than they were in 62? Do you really believe that they wouldn't do the same thing to push an agenda of gun control? Here is one thing I have always believed. My grandfather told me years ago, and I'm sure he probably heard it somewhere else, but he said, an honest man doesn't fear his neighbor with a gun. So are the people who fear honest people having guns, how would we classify them? The Constitution couldn't do anything about a corrupt election. The Constitution can't do anything about the Supreme Court or the appellate courts. They can't make them hear a case. If you cannot get a case heard before the courts, regardless of its merits, if the election was a complete and total fraud, the powers that be would like nothing better than to prove it in the courts. Then CNN and all of these socialists would be vindicated. We proved it wasn't a fraudulent election, but they don't want to prove it. So that tells you what. And so how did the Constitution help you out in this? How many people are going to be screaming as the SWAT teams come bursting through their door? Hey, I have rights. People at Waco tried that. Randy Weaver and his family tried that. Several people in Maryland under the red flag laws, they tried that. They yelled about their Fourth Amendment rights right before the cops shot them. When has your Constitution ever prevented tyranny? What pathway do you have to make anyone adhere to the Constitution? Please don't say elections. That just further illustrates your absolute insanity along those lines. You've been voting, people have been voting my entire lifetime. Has it gotten better or worse? Well, it doesn't work, obviously. So here we are, right back in the same mess again. It's getting worse and worse and worse. Where in the Constitution does the government have the right to shut down businesses because of a flu virus? They did it. Where in the Constitution does it allow people to force a vaccine on people? Somebody read that chapter and verse for me, please. All of the tyranny of this government, where in the Constitution is that authority given to government, and where in the Constitution is the authority for the people to challenge it? Dave, your thoughts, please.
Well, Mike, you know, I've been thinking about this. It's kind of strange that we have this Constitution and then we have to have a whole, court full of lawyers to interpret it. It seems to me it could have been written in a way that it's not open to interpretation. Isn't that possible?
Well, we have to remember, Dave, that most of the writings I've seen from attorneys is what I call word salad. You can go back and you can read Alexander Hamilton's proposition, the thousands of words he listed for advocating for a U.S. bank in 1791. Thousands and thousands of words. You get through all of those words and then you look at them and you go, what the hell did he say? That's what they do. That's their very purpose, is to obfuscate with words. Don't forget that 26 of the 39 signers of the Constitution were lawyers.
Right. Good point. And, you know, in reference to shutting down society for a flu virus and vaccines, there's a lot of talk. I heard some constitutional expert, so-called, talking about public safety. And the Constitution says that we all have the right to public safety. I don't remember seeing that in there, but that's what he said.
It's not in there.
Yeah,
it's not in there. But one of the things I have found, Dave, is that you could sit a group of people down. I would love to do this. And I have asked several people to create a focus group for me. I have called some of the local schools. I have called a couple of the local colleges and told them I would like to use, the senior class as a focus group, and even a couple of the colleges around here. I've called them and said, could I actually come in and distribute no, we can't do that. What's your subject? Why do you want to do this? What I'm trying to do is to find out the level of knowledge of a high school senior or a college senior on the Constitution. Because I can tell you this, having talked with the people about the Constitution for 30 years, the majority of people don't know enough about the Constitution to create a conversation that would last longer than a commercial on television. People just flat do not know the Constitution. And among them, the people who do not know the Constitution when they should are attorneys. Because they're not taught about the Constitution in law school. They're taught about precedent. When you go to law school as a student, you are taught what former judges have said the Constitution says. You're not allowed to think for yourself. You're not allowed to say, okay, well, what about this or what about that? You are taught precedent. What did John Marshall say in Marbury v. Madison? Probably be your first day of law school. But if you said, well, you know, John Marshall shouldn't have been involved in that case because he was actually part of the litigation to begin with, they will look at you like you've lost your mind. I know, I've done it. I was on a program in Harrison, Arkansas, back in 2018. I happened to be on the program with an appellate court judge from the state of Arkansas. And we finished our dissertation, and then we were taking questions from the audience, and I was asked something about the Bill of Rights, and I made my I answered the question to the best of my ability. Someone asked this appellate court judge about a constitutional issue. And this judge, who shall remain nameless, stood up and he said, folks, I'm not even going to pretend to know as much about the Constitution and Bill of Rights as Mike does. I'm not even going to pretend that because I don't. What we deal with is precedent, what the previous courts have said. That is what we deal with in the legal world. And he sat back down beside me, and I kind of leaned over to him, and I said, I don't believe I'd have said that. And that night, we were staying at the same hotel, and we were down having dinner, and I asked him about it again. I said, why would you have said that? And he said, well, it's the truth. I said, but you just told a group of people that a layman knows more about the Constitution than you do, and you're in a state appellate court judge. He said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, I told the truth. I said, Judge, I give you credit for that. I give you credit for being honest. They don't know the Constitution. I've talked with attorneys. I worked with attorneys for 2 years in Arkansas. And I've asked multitudes of them, how much did you learn about the Constitution in law school? One very nice lady in Fort Smith who was running for political office and who asked me to come in and to school her on the Constitution during her campaign. Now stop and think about that. Just the thought of that. Here is an attorney who is in a campaign and asked for a layperson to come in and to school her on the Constitution. Does anyone see the idiosyncrasy here, the absolute insanity of this thing? They do not know the Constitution, I promise you. I gave a program in Cortez, Colorado. Two attorneys had driven all the way from Arkansas to attend my Constitution class. One of the attorneys at the end of my program told me, he said, I learned more about the Bill of Rights today in 4 hours. I had a 4-hour class. He said, I learned more in 4 hours than I did at Harvard Law School. The people of this country do not know enough about the Constitution to know when it is being destroyed. They don't know enough about it to know that it does not give them all the rights that they scream. And the only reason they scream about my constitutional rights is because they saw somebody do it on TV. And when someone says, well, but it's my constitutional right. Well, tell me, chapter and verse, What is the purpose of that race, right that you believe you have? And what was the debate about that right in Congress and in the ratification conventions? And they look at you like you've lost your mind. But they will get so angry at you if you disparage their precious Constitution. Samuel Bryan, back in 1788, saw exactly what was going to happen with this document, and he predicted it perfectly. He said, the writers of this specious piece of drivel, and I'm paraphrasing, will wrap it in the cloak of divinity, and the people will love it. And that's exactly what he did. That's exactly what happened. As people now will tell you everywhere, oh, the Constitution was divinely inspired. Divinely inspired by a group of lawyers who refused to say a prayer before a session, voted it down. Benjamin Franklin said only three or four at the Constitutional Convention wanted prayer at all. That's three or four out of 55. What percentage is that? When have you ever had a group of Christians, 55 Christians, and only three or four of them thought prayer was necessary? We've been deluded with this thing. We have been told constant lies, propaganda, and lies about the Constitution because we think we have this life raft or this lifeboat, which is so full of holes that the government just uses it over and over and over to drown its victims. And all of you people out there who think the Second Amendment is going to protect your right, if you read the Ninth Judicial Circuit Appellate Court, read there and then tell me about your Second Amendment rights. And how much does that court respect your Second Amendment rights? Cal, thoughts?
Well, where to start? Everybody knows there's a reset coming. You can sense it. You can feel it. You can hear it, almost taste it. And people have a choice on this reset that's coming. You can't stop it. It's going to happen. You can make a choice. You can continue to cling to this document and continue to forge the change of your own servitude all the way into absolute despotism and slavery. Or you can stop and think and reanalyze things and start over and rethink your whole perception of government and your interactions with your fellow man. You've got that choice. You have a choice of freedom or slavery. And if you continue to cling to the Constitution and the path that it's leading, I mean, you can see it, you can feel it. You see it coming, you keep clinging to it, you're going to end up in slavery because that's where it's headed. You can see it. I don't know how to. It would take a whole conversation and a whole re-examination of the basis of society and government. And I don't know if people are ready to have that conversation yet. They got to let go of the Constitution in order to have it.
Well, I think it's coming, Cal. I really do. I think, but are the people going to wake up before they're in a gulag? That is the, or before they are completely controlled by these cultural Marxists who have taken over the government. Of course, they've been in place for quite some time. But here is the thing. I was reading Meryl Jensen, a really great historian, in my opinion, and good old Professor Jensen published his books from 1939 through early 1950s. And he was getting in at the tail end before the Marxists had completely taken over the education system in America. And he made a statement which most people, I don't think, have even thought or considered. And I think this would be good to talk about. And gentlemen, I would like to see you address Professor Jensen's, he's deceased now, of course, but to address his posit. And his posit was that the Constitution was written to countermand the Declaration of Independence. because the powers that were given to the people in the Declaration of Independence could not be allowed to continue. So, Dave, what do you think about that statement? Was the Constitution written to countermand the Declaration?
That's very interesting. Quite possibly, absolutely, because you have to think why between the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation, why did we need another document? It doesn't really compute if you think about it.
Well, let's look at some of the phrases which are found in the Declaration of Independence, which I promise you will not be found in the Constitution. Okay, what does it say? Let's look at this. Dissolve the political bands. Assume among the powers of the earth to declare the causes which impel them to this separation. It is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. Now listen to this one. It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security, that all political connection between them is and ought to be totally dissolved. Is it time for us to go back to the Declaration of Independence and forget the Constitution, Cal?
It's past time. It's the Constitution. I'm glad that professor agrees with me, because I've come to that same conclusion a while ago. The Constitution is exactly a betrayal of the principles laid out in the Declaration of Independence.
Well, we could get to our favorite part of that, at least what we've discussed lately, Cal, is that wonderful phrase about the only just government operates with the consent of the governed.
Ah, yes, consent. Yeah, that's there can't be a just government without the consent of those being governed. That's just the maximum of liberty.
Well, did the Ninth Court, the Ninth Judicial, Appellate Court, were they ruling to take away the right to carry a firearm? Were they doing that with the consent of the governed when they made that decision?
No.
Did Joe Biden have the consent of the governed to ask the Supreme Court to allow police to go into your homes without a warrant and seize your firearms? Did he do that with the consent of the governed?
No. But my rights don't come from the government, so I really don't care what they say.
Well,
that's my opinion.
I agree with that totally, Cal, but we also have to think what I'm dealing with right now is just the wording of the document itself and consent of the governed. And see, this is the thing that is so hard for people to understand. You cannot have consent of the governed until you have consent of all of the governed. Because nowhere in that document did it say consent of the majority of the governed. It doesn't say that. Dave, any thoughts, buddy?
Well, yeah. It's funny how they've replaced the consent of the governed to majority rules. That seems to be how they've pulled that one off, isn't it?
Well, when we get right down to it, you mentioned the Articles of Confederation. The reason that they felt like the Federalists felt like they had to get away from the Articles of Confederation was because the Articles of Confederation provided consent of the governed, all of the governed. And there are people today, I've had them say when I give my classes, I've had people say, well, you know what? There is no way in the world you would get everybody to consent to that. And I'd say, well, good. That probably means it's not a very good law. Because stop and think, what if we had the only thing the government could do was what everybody consented to? would we need all of these bureaus and all of these, this bureaucracy and the FBI and the DEA and the, you know, CIA and the NSA? Would we need all of these bureaucracies that are bleeding us dry, just as Patrick Henry predicted they would?
Whoa, what's that?
That was most probably this very terrific rainstorm I'm going through right now, guys.
Oh, okay. Okay, it sounds about right. I heard water running.
Storm.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it seems to me too, I've been thinking about this also, Mike, that the government keeps growing and growing like a cancer. And the end game is always going to be that the government takes over the entire economy as they produce more and more departments and bureaus and law enforcement. And we're heading towards that end game now.
Well, Dave, I couldn't agree more. And here was one thing that we've, the way this Constitution was set up, it was set up so the government would dominate the people. Because every time you have a session of Congress or a session of a state legislature, what do? They automatically set about, they feel like they're there, they have to make some more laws. And those laws never protect the people, but they always enslave the people. And they take more and more and more of the people's tax money. Everything right. A legislature does requires that. Go ahead.
No, and those laws are very rarely go away. They're permanent. It's very rare that they actually repeal any kind of a law. It's there forever.
Yeah, they promise you that the laws will expire. Very seldom ever do they expire. Because remember, during the Constitutional Convention, they claimed that they were renewing slavery for 20 years, but they never provided a way to stop it. What if we said, okay, we're going to make bank robbery legal for 20 years?
Oh.
And then it will become illegal.
Well, Dave brought up an interesting comment that the government's going to control the economy. Well, isn't control of the economy one of the tenets of communism?
Well, I actually believe it's in the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3 delegates the power to the government to control the economy. I mean, it's written right into the Constitution.
Well, any document, and I've said this from the beginning, people said, when did we become a socialist country? I said, when New Hampshire ratified the Constitution. Because any government which tells you that they can take any amount of your property that they want at any time for any purpose is a socialist government.
Exactly.
Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 gives this government that authority, and they have bled the American people dry with their own precious Constitution. So thoughts there, Dave?
Yeah. That's interesting about the it's actually in the Constitution they can do that. You know, most people just focus on, you know, the Bill of Rights and haven't read through in a precise manner the other parts of the Constitution and how it's full of phrases that you could drive a truck through, giving the government the power to do essentially anything it wants.
Yep. You know, one of the things I was going to bring up here, and I've got it in front of me now, was that I said that Merrill Jensen, author and professor Merrill Jensen, said, historian Merrill Jensen, said that the Constitution was a refutation of the Declaration of Independence. Well, there was this lawyer in Virginia on June the 5th, 1788, named Patrick Henry, at the Virginia Ratification Convention, who said exactly the same thing. And I quote, "Here is a revolution as radical as that which separated us from Great Britain. It is radical in this transition. Our rights and privileges are endangered and the sovereignty of the states will be relinquished. And cannot we plainly see that this is actually the case? Unquote. Well, Patrick, enough of them didn't see it in 1788, and they sure as hell don't see it in 2021. So, both of you guys, I got a question. Dave, let's start with you. Dave, you have this Constitution, you have this Bill of Rights. How would you go about using your constitutional rights to overturn the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals?
Well, I don't think that's possible. I think you painted yourself into a corner, and there's no legal way you can do it. I don't think so.
Oh, but you could file a lawsuit, Dave.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah, all you need is $1 million in 10 years of time, and you're most likely going to lose because you don't have standing. That's the go-to phrase now to dismiss anything they want.
So a people could file a lawsuit against the lawyers and the judges who made this decision. How do you think that'll turn out?
Well, I think it's predetermined that it's going to fail. And it's interesting, too, that the system was set up so that essentially you have lawyers that are able to interpret the Constitution, interpret your rights, and essentially change those rights at their own discretion, whenever they feel like it. It seems to me that as soon as you have a system set up like that, you're gonna run into big problems letting lawyers interpret what your rights are.
Well, Dave, that's a very interesting point, so I would ask this question. How many times has the United States Supreme Court reversed its own decisions in the past 235 years?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Quite a few times, though, correct?
Well, here's my question. According to the Constitution, how can the Supreme Court reverse themselves? Because if they said that this is constitutional, Article 5 of the Constitution says you can't change the Constitution without an amendment. Now, we did that twice, and then the courts finally said, you know, to hell with that. We're going to do what we want to. We had Dred Scott v. Sanford, 1857, which said that slavery was constitutional. So then we have the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, at least the third 13th Amendment to the Constitution, which says that slavery is not legal. So we overturned a Supreme Court decision after about 1 million people were killed because of their decision saying that slavery was constitutional. So about 6 years, 8 years, 9 years, whatever later, we have an amendment to change that. All right, then I believe it was, the 18th Amendment, where we said that alcohol was illegal in the country. And that led to probably one of the greatest efforts to increase organized crime in the history of the planet. So we could say that the Supreme Court helped instigate a war that killed 1 million people. Then the Supreme Court helped to instigate a law which helped organized crime flourish in America, and that was doing away. So we had to have another amendment to counter their ruling. But since then, the Supreme Court, and my research shows that over 300 times the Supreme Court has reversed itself. Well, if the Supreme Court said A is B, and then 10 years later said B is A, or not A, with a new ruling, which one was constitutional, their first one or their second one?
Well, Mike, you know, it's just astounding, too, that I think very few people realize that the Supreme Court actually ruled that slavery was constitutional. I think knowing that, it makes it hard to put much faith in anything they do or say.
Well, you know, and I've done shows on that. Look at Korematsu versus the United States in 1942, the Supreme Court said it was all right to put 100,000 Japanese in concentration camps just because they were Japanese. Now, is that not racist? Is that not anti-Asian? Who taught the people of this country to be prejudiced? Our government. But the government gets no blame for doing so. At the Constitutional Convention, the Quakers had begged through petition and letter to not make slavery, to just do away with slavery totally. These wonderful Federalists at the Constitutional Convention didn't even read it to the rest of the people. Trench Cox and Benjamin Franklin had this petition from the Quakers to abolish slavery, and they decided, nope, we're not going to do that. When Luther Martin made his protest against slavery, then Oliver Ellsworth from Connecticut had the great statement, as he said, look, we're not here for moral or religious purposes. We're here for commerce. So Ellsworth said very plainly, I don't care about enslaving another group of people if it brings us money. So the government embraced slavery in the Constitution. It codified slavery into the Constitution. It said, okay, we'll only have it for another 20 years, but they didn't put anything that would end it. In 1857, the U.S. Supreme Court says slavery is legal. It's constitutional. A few short years later, on March the 4th, 1861, Abraham Lincoln, in his first inaugural address, says slavery is constitutional, and he is not going to mess with it in any state where it exists because he does not have the authority to do so. Then Abraham Lincoln mentions also an amendment to the Constitution, the Corwin Amendment. The Corwin Amendment would have legalized slavery in the United States in perpetuity, outside of the dominion and control of even Congress. So if the southern states were fighting a war over slavery, all they had to do was to drop their secession and come back into the Union and ratify the Corwin Amendment, they would have had slavery forever. But the government never gets blamed for any of these things. We pick on a group of people. We pick on the southern people, and we say, oh, look how racist they were. Well, you know, I would like to bring up an analogy. Let's look at something. It's 1775, 1776. America is declaring its independence from Britain. There's people in America who own slaves in 1775, 1776. They own slaves. King George even promises the slaves, the blacks, if they will come over and fight for Great Britain, he will give them their freedom. Several thousand did. But we had slaves when we declared our independence from Great Britain. But we look at the American flag, which flew over slavery for 87 years, and that flag is fine. But we've got a flag that flew, a St. Andrew's Cross that flew over slavery in the South for 4 years, and that's racist. People, are you really that damn stupid? We had racism for 87 years, and it's not racist. We had slavery for 4 years in the South during the war, and that is racist. We put people into concentration camps who were Asian. We taught the American people through government to be prejudiced. Through rulings and through documents, we taught the people to be prejudiced. We said it's legal to be prejudiced. It's legal to be racist. Who's getting condemned for that today? The government? Oh, hell no. Help me out here, Dave.
Well, Mike, I've got a sort of a conspiratorial question. You know, you brought up earlier the prohibition and how it increased, organized crime tremendously. And then you're talking about this thing with the slavery and the Constitution. Is it possible that some of these decisions were actually done on purpose, not because it was an accident, but perhaps that these decisions were made on purpose in order to bring about future events? I mean, you don't have to be, a rocket scientist to see that prohibition was going to cause organized crime to skyrocket, and along with a lot of, moonshiners and just small backwoods people trying to make a few extra dollars, getting thrown in jail and having their livelihoods destroyed. And of course, the end result, now we essentially have a monopoly on liquor through the government. So do you think that this could have been done on purpose, possibly as part of a long-term agenda?
Well, great point, Dave. Let's go back to Dred Scott. The Dred Scott case stayed before the courts for 11 years. Where did a slave get enough money to hire those lawyers? Dred Scott was found to be free and no longer a slave in the courts of Missouri. The state court of Missouri set him free. And then they keep pushing it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court took a man that a state court had declared free and made him a slave again. After 11 years of legal wrangling back and forth. Now, why? Why would the Supreme Court in 1857 overturn a decision making a black man free? At the time the Supreme Court made the decision on Dred Scott, he was a free man according to the Supreme Court of the state of Missouri. Go back to John Marshall. Supreme Court will never overrule a court decision. Yeah, right. So here is a free man, Dred Scott and his family, and the Supreme Court says, no, you're not free, you're a slave. Do you think that maybe the Supreme Court is saying the same thing to Americans today? Look, you're a slave. We'll take your damn guns if we want to. You can't carry a gun. Someone told me that according to that Ninth Circuit Court's a decision that you can't even have a gun in your, you can't even carry a gun in your home. I don't know about that. I haven't researched that. So, but someone brought that up in a chat that we had, and I haven't had a chance to research it. But that is a precursor. If they're telling you you can't carry a gun in your own home, what happens if you get robbed or if somebody breaks in to rape your wife or your children and you shoot them? You're going to be the criminal because you couldn't have a gun in your home and you were obviously carrying it when you shot it. I'm continually amazed at the absolute emotional bondage of the American people. They are emotionally attached to words on a piece of paper. And they really, really believe that somewhere, somehow, you've got an endemic system of corruption in the law schools of America. They are controlled by Marxists. Many of your law school deans are very so proud of their socialist connections to Marxism that they actually boast about them. You really think you're going to get a decision out of one of these courts that will support the people? And one of my greatest questions is this one. And I've asked people over and over again. Those people who got together in Philadelphia in 1787, they were doing exactly what Oliver Ellsworth said they were doing. They were not there for morals. They were not there for religious reasons. They were there for commerce. That is why they put in the taxing provision, to tax the people for every out of every, as Luther Martin said, to sluice the people from every vein until they don't have another drop of blood. And Patrick Henry talked about the federal sheriff, that he will come into your homes and he will sap you dry. We've been told this and we still believe the crap. What do you have to do to convince Virginia there's not a Santa Claus? What do you have to do to convince adults that there's not an Easter Bunny? Or a magic tooth fairy? What do you have to do to get people to understand this? Put them in a gulag? Because they're certainly not going to understand it while they're sitting out here yelling about my constitutional rights. Any thoughts there, Cal?
I just, going back to one of those first maxims found in the Declaration of Independence that says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Does the Constitution rise to that occasion? I mean, a full study of the Constitution shows that securing the rights of the people was not the intention of the Federalists when they crafted the Constitution.
Exactly. So, well, coming up on break time, guys.
On that first maxim right there.
Coming up on break, we'll come back on the flip side. Thanks for tuning in to Dare to Think.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch The Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's The Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. As I sit here in a driving rainstorm, Cal, we've got all of your rain here, I'm afraid, buddy. I've got a river flowing down the road behind me. So I'm sorry we stole your water.
Too bad the weather patterns go your way instead of coming back this way.
Well, guys, coming back to the subject of Dare to Think, which most people would rather do anything than think. And I think my good friend Neil Ross out there in California has that quote someplace, which is just an absolute beautiful quote. But there are two quotes that I want to use now about the people in this Constitution that they're so enamored with, that they believe is going to part the seas of despotism so they can escape. First of all, I would like to quote Carl Sagan. And he said, and I quote, "One of the saddest lessons of history is this. If we've been bamboozled long enough," and I think 235 years is long enough, "we tend to reject any evidence of the bamboozle." "We're no longer interested in finding out the truth. That bamboozle has captured us. It's simply too painful to acknowledge, even to ourselves, that we've been taken. Once you give a charlatan power over you, you almost never get it back." That is just absolutely beautiful. And then we have this quote by Mr. Lysander Spooner. Now, people, I challenge you to prove Mr. Spooner wrong. I challenge you today. Offer me the evidence. When he said, "But whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain. It has either authorized such a government as we have had, or has been powerless to prevent it. In either case, it is unfit to exist." All right, people, tell me, did the Constitution authorize this blatantly fraudulent election? Yeah, it did, because the Supreme Court won't hear any objections to it. So the Constitution that created these courts has authorized this takeover. Okay, was this Constitution, where is the power to prevent the government from taking over and the Supreme Court from not hearing a lawful case before them? Can the Constitution prevent that? No. Well, if it can do neither one, it doesn't. It absolutely is unfit to exist. Is the Ninth Circuit Court ruling on your weapons? Is that Ninth Circuit Court, are they authorized to make that decision by the Constitution? Well, that's, you know, they did it. Okay, now, can you prevent it with the Constitution, which we've studied before? Absolutely not. Is there anything that Biden is doing that you, or anything that anyone else has done, that you can prevent with the Constitution? People, we have a U.S. code, and in that U.S. code it says that anyone who crosses this border, southern border, northern border, anybody who crosses the border without authorization is a criminal. How can the government choose to not enforce laws? If the government can choose which laws it enforces and which laws it does not enforce, you have no voice. And I was told yesterday that there is actually a Hispanic mayor in a southern, I don't know if it's Texas or Arizona, might even be California, who has actually written to written to Biden and said, look, we are getting 300 to 400 illegals crossing this border into our county every day. Our infrastructure cannot sustain this. But Kamala Harris is going to make sure that they can increase that number as much as they want to. Guys, I really don't see it. One of you, please, you know, Cal, Dave, step up here and tell me how we can use our constitutional rights to prevent this tyranny. Please, somebody help me. I'm getting apoplectic here.
You can't. Well, you know, first off, there's no such thing as a constitutional right. That's just a made-up phrase. But you can't use the Constitution against the government. It was created to protect the government from the people.
Well, Cal, you were starting before we came to the break, and you were making just an absolutely fantastic point. Oliver Ellsworth again said the Constitution, they met at the Constitution not for religious or moral purposes. They met for commercial purposes. And then the same people that we all think were divinely inspired, who wouldn't pray, these same people would not, they voted unanimously not to include a Bill of Rights in the Constitution. Now, if you were there to create a document to protect the people's rights, why would you unanimously say we don't need a, because a People's Declaration of Rights puts limits on the government? These people who wrote the Constitution wanted no limits on government. They sure made known that there would be no limits on taxation, and they made limits. They made provisions that there would be no limits on their powers through the courts. Thoughts, guys?
Well, Mike, I'd just like to read a comment from the chat room from Larkin, Texas, if I may.
Please.
Okay. He says, what law students do is learn how to make bank, firstly through the rules of court, rules of evidence, rules of criminal and civil procedure and case law. Then they're set loose as predators and highwaymen on a fawning and trusting public.
Well, amen. Thanks, Lark. I could not disagree with that in any shape, form, or fashion. We have seen this over and over and over again in their legal decisions. They're about commerce. The Constitution was written to protect the wealthy and well-born. Hey, Alexander Hamilton admitted that. They are there. They were. That was their entire purpose. That's why they made slavery legal instead of doing the moral thing and making it and outlawing it. They made to make sure that the wealthy and well-born would constantly live on the sweat of the brow of the working man. They put Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, which gave them unlimited taxation. What they said with Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 is, people, go out there and make all the damn money you want to. We're going to take it anyway. So the more money you make, the better off we are. Tell me that somebody explain Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 in another context, then we can tax you at any way, anyway, anyhow, anywhere, anything we want. If anything you have is ours. Now explain to me how that benefits the American public, and explain to me how you can stop them from doing exactly what they put into their own words. Any thoughts there, Dave?
Let's let Cal go first. Cal, go ahead.
Well, if everything you have and everything you earn, all the fruits of your labor are theirs, that means that you're a slave. That is, by definition, slavery. So Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 is a clause of slavery.
But it was inspired by God. Don't forget.
Well, yeah, they made slavery constitutional, literally, right there.
Well, does anyone think
if Africans, but everybody?
Well, does anyone think that if here was a group of men who were very, very comfortable with making one race of people slaves, does anyone believe for a second that they would worry about making another race of people slaves?
Well, that's true, Mike. And look how they sort of just pick and choose whatever race they want to serve their purposes at the time. And now we're seeing that kind of thinking being directed towards white people, how white people are all bad and we need to turn the tables on them, essentially.
Well, I don't want anyone to forget that the alleged shooter in Colorado who shot up the grocery store, allegedly, I don't want anyone to forget that he was Middle Eastern, but according to CNN, he had a white mind.
Well, when it first happened, they were saying he was a white supremacist.
Well, and you know, and if you go to Bubus Americanus, that's the first thing they heard. They believe it because, you know, the plastic heads on CNN told them it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that whole thing is very suspicious.
All they had to do was say white supremacist. Guys, I have a video from my friend in Australia, Andrew McGregor. I have a video of him from some guy inside the supermarket who is making all kind of pleas for someone to please come and help, all this other stuff, and he is standing in the door with his back to the gunshots. And he's not moving. Now, who in their right mind would do that?
Wow. I'd like to see that.
I'll send it to you as soon as we're through with the program here.
Great. Thank you.
And,
it's just so amazing, guys, when we look at this over and over and over again about... again, I can't get away from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1. How anyone could go past the very first power. Now, these people had to think, listing it first, if someone asks you what you want, you usually list what you want first. What would you like for dinner? Okay, well, let me see. Steak, potato. So you list the thing you really want most first. So these people sat down, and the first power they gave to Congress was the power of unlimited taxation from unlimited sources. How can you believe a damn thing they wrote after that? How can you have faith in anything? If I came to your house and held a gun, which is in essence what the government does, and I said, anytime I want your money, I'll come over and get it. Anytime I want any of your property, I'll come over and get it. For any reason that I deem necessary and proper, I'll take everything you own. Are you going to be okay with that? If you're not okay with me doing it, why are you okay with the government doing it? But don't forget, the government is the tooth fairy.
Ah, yeah, you wake up and find a quarter under your pillow, like magic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like magic, and that's the government. Hey, we take everything you have, but we'll send you a stimulus check.
Yeah, and then we're going to raise taxes on the back end, so we get the money back anyway.
Yeah, but Bubas isn't smart enough to figure that out. And here's a proposition. This has always struck me from the first time I heard this thing about a minimum wage. We have to have a minimum working wage. Well, you know, with the government doing everything they're doing, guys, if we're going to say that a minimum and a livable wage is $15 an hour, so we're going to make everybody have a wage of $15 an hour, or we're going to give everybody free health care, why don't we just give everybody free everything? Why don't we just all submit to the government our bills for the month and have the government pay all of our bills? If we want a new boat, a new yacht, a new something else, just have the bill go to the government. How can you come up with the very theory that everyone deserves something? Hell, everyone deserves a Mercedes. This whole process has destroyed our ability to think, dare to think out loud. It has destroyed our ability to think. Everybody's on an emotional roller coaster.
Oh, don't say bad things about my Constitution.
Ah, sorry. Jump in here, Dave.
Well, yeah. And Mike, it's amazing. In regards to, say, gun control, the government wants to keep a monopoly on use of violence. And as this thing sort of unravels, I believe that the use of violence is going to be absolutely necessary. I think the government's actually going to declare some form of martial law. That's why we're seeing the National Guard involved in giving shots and working at food banks now, which is very odd, and building field hospitals for COVID patients. They're just introducing the use of the military into civilian life. And I think they're sort of prepping people's minds for what's going to be martial law, because as Cal talked about earlier with this reset, they're going to have to do this through force. Ultimately, people, if they don't accept it, you're going to have troops on the streets with machine guns, with orders to fire on the public in order to get this new system unrolled.
Okay. Well, here's a question. We've brought up the subject of gun control. Dave, Cal, can either one of you gentlemen show me where in the Constitution that the federal government has the right to decide what kind of firearm I could own in the first place?
That's not to be found anywhere in the Constitution.
And Mike, weren't you saying before that this thing about the militia, wasn't that added in at the last minute? Is that correct?
Well, that was one of the tricks by the wonderful James Madison. Amendments as they came from the states. And now here is something that most people are unaware of, is that in almost all references to the right to keep and bear arms written by the anti-federalists, in almost every application where the right to keep and bear arms was listed, the reason the people should have the right to keep and bear arms was because the government would have a standing army. The provision to keep and bear arms was to give the people the power over the government standing army.
Right. Well, and I guess if the amendment just said the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, period, full stop, it'd be a lot more difficult to have started meddling with it, wouldn't it?
Well, then in other words, if we actually went by the Second Amendment, which says that, if we actually went by that, then every damn gun law in America is unconstitutional. Now, when is the last time? But see, you got Americans, especially the people who claim to be patriots, whatever the hell that means now, you've got all of them saying, oh, well, we need a universal concealed carry law. What? So you're saying, okay, the government has a right to tell everybody they can carry a gun. Well, if the government has the right to tell everybody they can carry a gun, the government has a right to tell everybody they can't have one. Do not put a power in the hands of government that you're afraid they might use on you. Because that's exactly what the public, the NRA, no rights anymore is what that stands for. If there's anyone who's... And the NRA, you know, operation, I was trying to think what operation that was that they got behind, that they actually supported the hiring of 500 new agents for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
That's yeah, like, I saw that.
That's like the Germans saying, oh, okay, here, we're here in a gulag, but I tell you what, let's authorize money for more guards. The yeah. insanity of this, the people in this country just absolutely blows me away. Oh, we've got to stand up. We've got to have concealed carry laws. We've got to fight for them. Again, uh-huh. you're saying that the government has the right to decide whether you can have it or not.
Wasn't the NRA behind the whole idea of a concealed carry license to begin with?
Possibly. I think it originated mostly in Florida. In the beginning, but then it went everywhere. I totally opposed it back 20-some years ago when people were first starting it because of the very reason that I just gave. If you want the government to tell you you can carry a gun, the government can tell you you can't carry a gun.
Mike, could you expand on this notion that it was Madison that added in the well-regulated militia part? Because that seems to be the way they've inserted all these gun laws into our lives.
Well, and that is true. And another thing they've done through this is grammar. You know, they go through the part of the Second Amendment about a well-regulated militia being necessary, you know, blah, 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 blah. Initially, there was a semicolon after that before it said the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Wow.
Originally, there was a semicolon. They changed that and put a comma.
What a difference a semicolon makes. That's amazing.
Yes. So this has been deceit from the very beginning. And of the states that listed the right to keep and bear arms, not one of them in their proposed amendment said anything about a well-regulated militia. And the person who was responsible for that, the only person by elimination that you can bring up who put that in there had to be James Madison.
That's just amazing that a semicolon actually changes the complete meaning of the Second Amendment. It's amazing.
Well, they had in the original documentation, which is in the National Archives, there is a semicolon after a well-regulated militia being necessary to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then before, you know, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, there was a semicolon. Now, if you look at almost everywhere, you'll see a comma.
Right, and that opens the door to interpret it completely different. Yeah, it's amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Cal, did you fall in the river there in Arizona?
No, not falling in the river, just following along here. Yeah, it's the Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit of Appeals Court, has decided that I no longer have a right to keep and bear arms outside of my house. And I assert that I have the natural right to keep and bear arms, period. And I guess we're going to see what's going to happen, because obviously the government isn't protecting my rights if they're saying that I don't have that right. So I don't understand how the Constitution and the government is protecting my rights if they're all of a sudden saying that I don't have that right. It just does not compute with me.
Well, you know, guys, at some point in time, we probably should get into, if we don't bore people to death with that 1934 Gun Control Act, because that was a huge fraud. And that's where the government took away from the American public the right to have the same armament that the military and the police have. Now, that should tell you something. When the government can have arms you can't have, let me see now. What did they say on the plantations? Okay, we can have guns, but you slaves can't. Huh. Is there an analogy there somewhere? Okay, we can have fully automatic weapons. You guys go to prison if you try to. Okay, we can have silencers on our weapons. You can't. That's master and slave personified, people. I can have something, you can't have it. That is not consent of the governed by any stretch of the imagination. So we not only have a, every gun law in this country, and every damn one of them is unconstitutional. So don't tell me about your constitutional rights, people, because your constitutional rights have been eviscerated a long time ago. Don't walk down the street and tell me I've got constitutional rights when there's anti-gun laws all over this country. Don't tell me about your constitutional rights. And please, 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 don't tell me about your constitutional rights, you people who claim to be Christians. Don't tell me about your constitutional rights when you vote for people that will not stop abortion. Now, whether you agree with it or not, I don't give a damn. It's not in the hands of the government to make that decision. So why did you give it to the government? Why do you agree with the government having it? It's unconstitutional. They made that Roe v. Wade came out of thin air. It was an enigma wrapped in a conundrum. Nothing in the Constitution says the government can decide whether a woman can have an abortion or not. Nothing. But yet, we have constitutional rights. People, you don't have crap. You have the right to obey. That's the only thing you have the right to do.
Well, and furthermore, Mike, I think if you looked into the minds of the people who were alive at that time, I think the idea of an abortion would have been absolutely abhorrent to them.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And why would you ever say that the government has the right to make that decision? Because what you did is you just put government in the power of a doctor. You gave the government the right to make medical decisions in your life. And boy, are we seeing the ramifications of that.
Oh, yeah, we're seeing the merging of the military-industrial complex with the medical-industry complex within the government.
Exactly, because they're both controlled by the same thing, which is the deep state. So right. we're seeing exactly that. You gave over your rights. You gave them up willingly. The only rights you have are those you will defend. And no one has defended the Second Amendment rights. You don't defend your Second Amendment right by sending money to the NRA. That is the American concept. We've got 300 plus million people in this country sitting back on their ass waiting for somebody else to do something. The nation of slaves.
Mike, I'd just like to point out that those Minutemen who met their fellow British subjects at Lexington and Concord weren't defending the Second Amendment. They were defending theirs and their fellow man's rights, period. But they knew that they knew where their rights came from, and they knew why they needed to defend them.
Yes, and the British were led by Major John Pitcairn. And Major John Pitcairn said to the people, "Lay down your arms and submit, rebels." You know what? What if they had, just like the cowardly American public today, what if they would have laid down their arms and walked off?
Like Virginia when they had their demonstration last year?
Yeah. What if they would have laid down their arms and walked off?
Yeah.
There would have been no America.
Well, do either one of you guys see a path to getting back to that kind of thinking and mindset that people used to have, or you know, how do we backtrack this somehow?
Well, Dave, in my opinion, what we have now is, again, what I said a minute ago, we've got 300 million people sitting around waiting for somebody else to do it. You know, hey, don't bother me because there's TV. You know, I'll get a six pack of beer. I'll sit back here. I'll be comfortable. Hey, you guys take care of that freedom stuff. You guys do that. I don't have time. I'm busy. You know, I've got too many things to do. Probably, you know, I get on my laptop. There might be, you know, a good porn movie on or something. I don't have time for freedom. They're entertained. We have an entertained populace. And Emma Goldman said the Americans do not want to be free. They want to be comfortable. Well, that comfort's about to go away, people, and you've waited too damn long. But, Dave, your question is a very valid question. Here's one of the things I was talking with my friend in Ohio about. And here was the thing. This is something I've noticed from the very beginning. But I would tell people, hey, this thing is rotten. This thing is corrupt. And the first thing they ask you is, well, what are you going to replace it with? Okay, well, let me do this. If I was a doctor and you walked into my office, you came in and you went through a whole series of tests. And I said, you know what? You've got cancer. I'm sorry to tell you, but you've got cancer. And would your first question be, oh, no, can't you replace that with another disease? Would that, and that's the American mindset of, I'm not going to stop being a slave until you can show me a better way. Take it, let's make the analogy of an alcoholic. A person's an alcoholic. They're having all kind of problems. They've hit rock bottom. What's the first thing they have to do to break that cycle? They've got to stop. You don't, of course, the government will tell you, okay, all right, so you're addicted to alcohol. Here, let me give you a drug to help you with that.
And it's not your fault either.
And it's not your fault that you can't stop drinking. It's a disease. And so here, why don't you, instead of drinking alcohol, why don't we just give you, here's some cocaine. Here's some heroin. Here's some other stuff. Try that. I believe it'll help you with your alcohol problem. And people today have that mindset. You can tell people, hey, you're going down a path here that's going to lead to the total enslavement of your children and your grandchildren, and they go, okay, well, what's your better plan? What do you have better than this? Well, the first thing you have to do to ever change directions is to stop going in the direction you're going. But, Dave, we will never get there until we get an educated people. As long as we have people making emotional decisions, Oh, this Constitution is wonderful. I know the Constitution's a Christian document because I saw a David Barton DVD. And he said it was. And that's why I've said this over and over again. The easiest lie to get someone to believe is the one they want to believe to start with. So David Barton was a genius. He said, you know, look, I'll just make up, I'll take a bunch of quotes out of context. I'll tell a bunch of lies. I'll make some DVDs and I will send them to the Christian community. And what I will say in there is, hey, the Constitution was a Christian document. And all of these people in all these churches will buy my DVDs because I'm telling them what they want to hear. And that is exactly what's happened in this country, is people will tune out anything that makes them uncomfortable. And the most uncomfortable thing in this world is the truth. And people just don't want to know the truth. They will rant and rave, oh, my wonderful Constitution. Well, okay, how's your Constitution working, people? Did your act of 1871, did that put Trump in office on March the 4th? You QAnon people, has the all of the Democrats being arrested and taken to gulags and put in where they're supposed to be put? Has all of these promises you've been told, what is the very crux of all of these promises? All of these promises have one thing: sit still on your ass and do nothing. That is the purpose of the promise. Don't do anything. Someone's coming to hell. And that is why we have the mindset in this country of, I can't do anything to ensure my freedom, the freedom of my children, the freedom of my grandchildren, the freedom of my posterity. I can't do anything about that because somebody else is going to do it for me if I just sit here and wait long enough. That's where it's going. Jump in, Dave. Catch me while I get a drink.
Well, you know, Mike, you brought up an interesting point when you were discussing, you know, the Constitution with your friend. And they said, well, what do we replace it with? What's interesting is, like, for example, in the public schools, they're already doing that. Only they're replacing the Constitution with overt Marxist thinking and essentially communism. And so we have at least two generations of young people growing up believing that socialism and communism is the answer, which means more government. And so we have this public school system that has been poisoning the minds of people gradually. And now we're at the point where they're openly teaching, you know, not only homosexual sex to young children, but overt Marxism and communism as a replacement for the Constitution.
Well, you know, we don't have to give them a replacement for the Constitution. We did that a long time ago. But they still adhere to it. And that's a very valid point, Dave. Our youth have been totally perverted. And the majority of American citizens were more than willing to send their kids off and have somebody else look after them. It develops the mindset. I don't have to educate my children. Government will do it for me. I don't have to make decisions. Government will do it for me. I don't have to make medical choices. Government will do it for me. We have set up a completely dependent society. And if you want an answer, the answer to government tyranny is never more of what brought it in the beginning. You can't cure a government problem with more government. It's never happened in the history of man. It's just outside of the complete, I don't know. Sometimes I look at people and it's just amazing anymore of what we have become, a group of mumbling idiots.
That's a great point, Mike, that just the very idea that you're going to send your kids off and have the government educate them for you, it was a fatal flaw in people's thinking, and we just didn't see it.
Well, it was so convenient. But what's the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto, Dave?
Right, exactly. Yeah, government schools, control of schools.
Okay, what's the second plank of the Communist Manifesto?
I don't know offhand.
Ah, the unlimited taxing system. Now, here's my question.
Oh, wow.
Here's my question. Did the people in Philadelphia in 1787, did they get the idea of unlimited taxation from unlimited sources from a man who wasn't born yet? Or did Karl Marx get that idea from the American Constitution? It's a good question.
That is a good question, actually. I never thought of that.
Well, we do know that, you know, if you ask anybody about the greatest presidents in American history, I promise you Abraham Lincoln's going to be in the top five. And Abraham Lincoln brought us the IRS. He instituted the Internal Revenue Service, and he brought us the first income tax. That's a great reason to put a marble monument to the man in Washington, D.C. The man who said in his first inaugural address that he was not going to interfere in the with slavery in the states where it existed because he didn't have the authority to do so. And he was being totally correct. He did not. So people said, well, he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation. Well, what's the first sentence? It says it's a war measure. But in the Emancipation Proclamation, he didn't free any of the slaves in the states where the North had control. He freed the slaves in the South, hoping that they would all come rushing over to the North and cripple the South. That was his hope. That was a war measure. He did not do that to free the slaves. As a matter of fact, Edward Stanton said, well, isn't it ironic, Mr. President, that you freed the slaves where we have no control, and where we do have control, you kept them all in bondage? Now, I bet your kids are never taught that in school. So, Cal, Marx was getting too quiet over there, buddy.
I was just going to say, Marx was actually a fan of Lincoln. He wrote Lincoln and congratulated him on his second election to being president when he was reelected. They actually wrote letters to each other.
Yeah, and let's see now. Karl Marx was the top columnist for what newspaper during that time era?
Horace Greeley's newspaper, the New York.
The New York Tribune. As a matter of fact, Karl Marx wrote more articles for the New York Tribune than any American at the time. And Karl Marx had a very good friend whose name was Charles A. Dana, D-A-N-A. They had been big movers in the Socialist Party in Europe up until 1848. Now, Charles A. Dana became the editor of Mr. Greeley's newspaper, and he had Karl Marx as his top columnist. But then what happened to Charles A. Dana? Oh, Mr. Lincoln gave him a job as the Assistant Secretary of War. Also, let's look at another tyrant in history, somebody we love to hate. On page 537 of Mein Kampf, written by Adolf Hitler, who did he praise for dissolving the states in the U.S.? Abraham Lincoln. So we've got two of the biggest tyrants in history, Marx and Hitler, who were big fans of one of our favorite presidents. How does that work? Somebody help me out here. I'm getting a headache.
Oh, Marx had influence on Lincoln, and Lincoln had influence on Marx. Because if anyone who studies Lincoln looks at when he was younger, he he seemed pretty, you know, somewhat constitutional, somewhat oriented that way. But Lincoln was also a huge fan of reading and reading of political doctrine. And in 1848 is when Marx's Communist Manifesto came out. And if you look at the way Lincoln was prior to 1848 to how he became, by the time he became president, you see a marked change in Lincoln's philosophy about government and about people. And he kind of followed what Charles Dana once said in 1848, that everyone now is more or less a socialist. And that's people don't understand the influence that Communist Manifesto, when it came out, had as an influence on the people who were the so-called powers that be at that time. I don't know what else to add to that. Are we there?
Well, yeah. Here's a question. What president in U.S. history ordered the largest mass execution of American Indians in history, the largest mass execution, where the defendants' trials lasted less than 10 minutes each?
Lincoln.
Oh, Lincoln ordered the execution of 39 American Indians whose guilt was totally up in the air, and my ancestors are racist. Either you guys ever heard of Thomas's Legion?
No.
No, I haven't.
Well, Thomas's Legion was a legion, one of the few legions in history that actually he fought for the Confederacy. And the majority of the men in Thomas's Legion were Cherokee, because Thomas was the head of the Cherokee tribe. The only man of color ever to be ranked at general during the so-called Civil War was Stan Waddy, who was a Cherokee, a man of color. But the South is racist. Most of the five civilized tribes associated themselves with the Confederacy, not with the Union. John Ross, who was president of the, or chairman of the Cherokee tribe at the time, wrote a scalding condemnation of the North. The Cherokees, I believe, were people of color. The five civilized tribes were people of color. Stan Waddy and these people fought under the Confederate battle flag. Were they racist? Was Abraham Lincoln, who ordered the execution of 39 American Indians in Minnesota, the Santee Sioux, was he a racist? Why are all of these facts? Why do Americans not care about the actual truth? What about your wonderful Union generals who, when they were talking about the Indian Wars, when you end up with the, I'm trying to think of the Union general now who was active in the Indian campaigns, and he said, "The only good Indian I ever saw was dead." William Tecumseh Sherman told his son shortly before his death, "I wish I could have killed all of those red sons of bitches. But my ancestors are racist."
The flag, what a thing to say right before your death. What an unrepentant soul he was. My God.
Yeah.
Well, I just become totally perplexed. Do people not know this history, or do they not want to know this history?
They don't want to know because the truth hurts. It can be very painful to learn the truth, as some people are finding out.
Well, that is true without a doubt.
I confess, I literally cried when I found out what I found out about the Constitution. I was a pocket Constitution wearing freaking status at one point. And, you know, my studies led me to where I am now. And when I came to that realization of what the Constitution really was, you know, my whole world was turned upside down. It was depressing. I literally had tears in my eyes when I finally realized what evil has been perpetrated upon mankind by this Constitution.
Well, guys, I'm going to tell you that one of the things in all of my efforts over the years, one of the things I am most proud of is the fact that on the 9th day of January in the year 2003, a little over 18 years ago, I wrote an article. And I got, shortly after that, I got an email from the people at UnitedNativeAmerica.com. And they asked for permission to display my article. And I told them with all of the, I would consider that to be such an honor that they wanted to put my article up on their website. And here we are 18 years later, and it's still up on their website. And the title of my article was The American Indian and the Great Emancipator. And, you know, folks, if you would like to read that article, you can go to UnitedNativeAmerica.com and put in Great Emancipator, and it will pop right up so you can read it. And included in that article is what John Ross had to say. And it was funny that John Ross almost echoed the Declaration of Independence. And I will read part of that. He said, "When circumstances beyond their control compel one people to sever the ties which have long existed between them and another state or confederacy, and to contract new alliances and establish new relations for the security of their rights and liberties, it is fit that they should publicly declare the reasons by which their action is justified." And then he goes on to list crime after crime after crime of the federal government under Abraham Lincoln. Again, I am very touched that the people at NativeAmerica.com have kept that up for 18 years. Well, guys, we're running out of time. I have blathered on here for the better part of 2 hours. You got a summation you would like to do, Cal?
The only summation I would like to do would be to say there's a great reset coming. People are going to have to make the choice whether they want to follow the Constitution and the despotism, or whether they want to learn what their rightful liberty is, where their rightful liberty comes from, and pursue their rightful liberty. You've said that nothing's going to save us but a divine intervention. And considering where man's rightful liberty comes from, I would say that that is that divine inspiration you are talking about, is man's rightful liberty. But since rightful liberty is possessed by each individual, it's going to be up to the individual, not up to someone else.
All right, Dave, summation from you, sir, please.
Well, I think the summation would be that it's time to really rethink society's relationship with government, because we're heading into the end game with this government, and it ain't going to be pretty.
I agree, Dave. It's going to get worse every day. Guys, I just would like to take the opportunity, while we have maybe 2 minutes or so here, to thank you gentlemen for coming along every Friday and putting up with me. That in itself is worthy of some praise. So I appreciate that very much. Sunday, Oh, what do you got on tap for tomorrow, Dave? Tell us about that very quickly.
Well, Mike, I've got these two guys coming on that seem to be pretty smart. Daryl Wayne and Mike Gaddy are going to come on, and we're going to start off trying to pick Daryl's brain about certain aspects of 9/11 that I think Daryl is sort of in a unique position to answer. And then we'll just kind of see where it goes from there.
All right. I'm looking forward to that as well. I'm always like to listen to what my buddy DW has to say, especially about 9/11 and the aircraft industry. And Sunday afternoon on the Addicted to Our Own Destruction, DW and I will be back Sunday afternoon at 6 o'clock Eastern. I appreciate all you folks who have taken the time to listen to our program today at Dare to Think. Again, I think I'm going to drop the out loud and just say Dare to Think. Cal, Dave, really appreciate you guys. Anything else we could kind of close out with, Dave, on your mind?
Mike, it's just been, it's always, you know, every time you do one of your shows, I definitely learned something, and your information is pretty unique. Not many people are talking about what you've researched into, Mike, so thank you.
It's always always been a pleasure, and just to say thanks to everyone out there who has taken the time to listen. Our good buddy Neil out in California, hope everything is well with him. Jamie in Alabama, DW in Alabama, the Tater Tots in Idaho, and Wendy in Idaho. But closing it out, guys, hey, thanks everyone, appreciate you, have a wonderful weekend, and please dare to think.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Zero X E 0513.
We talked about this and